Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. It's episode 222. It's been a while since I've thrown out the number. How are you doing, Bob?
Ooh, 222 sounds fun. It's, I don't know, what would you call that when you repeat the same number over and over again? If it was the same letter, you would call it consonants. But what is it? Is it numerants? Is this a numerant episode?
I believe it is. I've never heard that word before, but I'm just going to agree with it because it sounds smart. If it was episode 227, then we could dedicate it to 80s sitcoms, but that's in five episodes from now.
Or 237. We could dedicate it to The Shining.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's right. Maybe that's 15 episodes from now.
Well, what would be, room 222. What could we dedicate that to? There should be something. Let's dedicate it to the number 8.
Okay, because 2 times 2 times 2 is 8.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's 2 to the power of 3. And the third in this group is you, dear listener.
We worked hard for that sea level joke.
Too hard.
A little. Speaking of working hard, how about the Montreal Canadiens?
Golly. Get out your hard hat. These habitants are on their way to the cup final. Who saw this coming? Literally nobody, Matt. Literally nobody.
Yeah, my first thought is, can we stop calling the, unless there's other footage that hasn't been seen or released, that was not a riot. And listen, overturning one car, and I think it might have been a cop car, that is stupid. That is dumb. There is no reason for it. And the people who did it, if there's charges against them, fantastic. I'm all for it. But let's not call it a riot. Let's save riots for when riots are really riots.
There was gunplay at the Raptors victory celebration.
Yeah.
You know, that's a story we don't talk about that often. I think Montreal has a bad rap because historically stuff like this has happened sometimes around hockey. And
yeah.
Also, I just think there's a lot of, if the Leafs made the cup final, I don't know that there would, like, what the reaction would be, but whatever it is, it would be big.
There'd be a car.
There might be a car.
There'll be a car flipped over. It's if the Leafs win the cup or if the Leafs got this far, then yeah, there would be a car. I'm just saying, I need multiple cars. I need looting. I need fire. You know what I need? I need live on the scene helicopter footage.
Yes. Wait. Yeah. I'm going to go one step further because I spent a lot of time in LA. Helicopters with searchlights.
Yes. You know,
in LA, a helicopter with a searchlight is like looking up and seeing a plane in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the norm.
It's way too normal.
Yeah, if all my footage is from someone's smartphone, that's not a riot.
It sets up my first question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
It's clearly impressive. Mm-hmm. It's clearly surprising. And it's definitely interesting. But has Montreal's run to the cup been fun?
No, because at least in these parts, everyone is viewing Montreal's success through the prism of the Leafs' failure. And you can't truly appreciate the aesthetic of a hockey game when the entire time you're staring at, the salary cap of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
So this divides up Montreal's run into two categories, neither one of which is fun. And this is where I wanted to get at to start. One is it's impossible to see it without the prism of the Maple Leafs. Let's park that one aside. The other one is you talked about the aesthetic. And with the exception of Carey Price, I'm not sure there is a Montreal aesthetic. They basically just look for breakout plays, something off the rush created by something that they create defensively, and that's exciting. So there's been some interesting one-on-one plays, like, Paul Byron zipping in, Nick Suzuki, whoever it is, just cutting in Caulfield last night. But generally, like, as quote-unquote hockey, it's low event.
Yes.
It is somnambulant hockey. They are, like, they take a team like Vegas, and it's like they give it a gravel. They just slow it down.
The Montreal Canadiens have treated playoff hockey the way you treat your child before you get on a plane. Give right. them some child's chewable gravel, and you know, we'll wake you up when we've hit Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, now we're going to have to do this for 3 hours, so Daddy and Mommy need you to be quiet. So we're just going to put your headphones on, let you watch Tupi and Binu, and maybe give you one of these yummy, yummy chewables.
Yeah,
and we'll see you in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. Bada bing, bada bang.
I don't think it's been fun, but it's certainly been impressive.
Yes.
Because it is so unlikely, despite the fact that they are the Habs and we are Leafs fans, are we going to cheer for them in the final, whoever it's against? Like, if it does wind up, like, let's take this in two scenarios. Would you rather see the Habs beat the Islanders?
I don't know how to answer that. Like, I'd have to go through every member of the Islanders. It really, at this point, comes down to who's got the players that would be the happiest to see win it all. And it kind of feels like Carey Price deserves a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good point, and actually way more logical than I'm allowing myself to be. I'm going to be much more selfish about this.
If
the Habs lose to the Islanders, then not only does Lou Lamoriello and all that bullshit narrative go on forever and make everyone feel worse, it's like the one team that could beat the Habs was the Islanders. Mm-hmm. Because right now, the Leafs are the only team that's pushed the Habs to the seventh game, which in some bizarre way actually is a form of success. Like, the Leafs actually have done the best against the Habs of the three teams they've faced.
Yeah, I can't buy into that. They were 3-1.
I don't buy into it either. But my point is, if they wind up losing to the Islanders, then it's like nobody but the Islanders could beat them, which makes it even worse. So if it's the Islanders that get through in game seven, I'm going to wear a Habs jersey.
Yeah, see, I can't go that far. My feeling here is I've decided to stop thinking of the Maple Leafs when Montreal plays, because that's no way to watch a hockey game when you just have anger. And so I am not cheering for Montreal, but I have nothing but appreciation, and what they're doing is really super impressive. And if they win the cup, then I'd be happy for Shea Weber. I'd be happy for Carey Price. And for the NHL, at least you've got a couple of young guys, Kotkaniemi and Cole Caulfield, that you know, like, hey, you can point to as some other young stars in the game.
Nick Suzuki, we'll get to Nick Suzuki later. I want to talk about him for a bit. So,
hold on, Bob. There's one thing I want to go back to.
Yeah.
What is the bullshit narrative of Lou Lamoriello? He was the architect behind the New Jersey Devils that won cups. He brought legitimacy and certainly helped the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think the only narrative is for people that super duper hate Dubas, then they think Lou walks on water. But then there's the other side of the narrative, the people that are really defensive of Dubas, they'll just keep screaming about Patrick Marleau's contract and they forget all the good things that Lamoriello did. To me, the weird thing here is like this: the narrative is a strange one. I don't know why even the most ardent Dubas supporter can't go, yeah, Lamoriello, he's really good at his job.
Okay, so he was GM of the year, and yet he shouldn't have been GM of the year.
That's
because
fine.
I think there's like this mystique around Lou Lamoriello.
Okay.
Because he's done this for a long time. You see this with Jim Rutherford, too. Like, there's something that's weird about hockey where if you're a young GM, we suspect you. But if you're an old GM, then it's like, oh, you've done it before. And that's just so hockey. If you've done it before, you must still be good at it. If you haven't done it yet, you're bringing new interesting things to the table and new things frighten me. I'm caveman lawyer. You know, so there's that bullshit narrative. I don't think he did that great a job with the Leafs, to tell you the truth. I think he did a mixed bag, and we're seeing it now. I think he did something pretty good in concert with Mike Babcock, and that was get the team from being a joke to being okay. You know, you can't say that anybody else, you know, wouldn't have drafted Austin Matthews. It was a bit of a no-brainer. To go back to a Brian Burke quote, Pittsburgh won a GD lottery, right? Like, sometimes you just get Sidney Crosby. So, you know, they took Mitch Marner.
And also with the Marner one, Lamoriello said from day one, he's starting. He's like, I don't care about this. He's too small thing.
Yeah, that's great, Matt. Mitch Marner may not be the right guy.
Well, I just,
I don't think they should have taken Dylan Strome. And is it better if they would have taken? And is it better if they would have taken a Zach Werenski? I think it's too early to say that sort of thing. But where you really have questions about Lamoriello's approach is how he effed the salary cap for this team right now. Like, all the things that Dubas can't do aren't because Dubas is stupid. It's because Lamoriello set him up for failure with big deals to Matt Martin, with big deals to X player and Z player, and they didn't draft particularly well. So there's no one on an ELC that they can just insert in there. You know, Nick Suzuki makes $2.5 million a year. They, the Leafs don't have that kind of option right now because they don't have any good young players. Like, in theory, a Nick Robertson should be plug and play, but there should be guys before Nick Robertson who are plug and play into this team. You know, like, this idea that Lou's a genius and how could they let him go? Like, what the hell did Lou do that was actually brilliant, other than make sure everybody kept their hair cut and their nails clean and make it to the, like, he took them from a joke to respectability, but they are effed now because of his leadership style.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
First off, I don't think I was saying he's still a genius. I think he's a very good GM, and you know, he still has done it. Like, the whole, oh God, the old guy's done it before. Well, at least he's done it. Dubas hasn't. And if I look at all these contracts now, in the current day, I'm not putting all this on Lou. And by the way, I've never been the guy that said, oh, they should have kept Lou and screwed Dubas. But Dubas and Shanahan, it's not just Dubas. Dubas and Shanahan, their plan so far has failed. You know, and that's kind of my point, is that everyone ripping Lamoriello because they're defending Dubas, I just find that weird.
And I think you're artificially bifurcating Dubas's plan from Lamoriello's plan, because a lot of the building blocks that were put in place for Dubas to try and do what he's trying to do were handcuffed by the fact that Lamoriello did a bad job of certain things.
Yeah.
So when we say the team's not deep enough, well, part of that is because they had to do stupid things like get rid of Marlowe's deal and give up a first rounder. And because they had to get rid of what's the defenseman's name who we wound up sending to Ottawa? Zaitsev. No, Zaitsev.
Oh, Zaitsev. Yeah, Zaitsev. Excuse me. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, there are things that had to be fixed. And I think everybody was like, okay, now it's Dubas's turn. What can he do? It's not that fair. He was inheriting good stuff on one side, but a mess on another. You know, this is, you know, you like your Russian politics analogy about the two envelopes.
Yes.
Right. Can you say it just for people who haven't heard it?
So there's been an election and the new boss is coming in. And the new boss is talking to the old boss. And the old boss gives the new boss a piece of advice. Write two messages in two and put them in two separate envelopes. And open up the first one when you get in trouble. And the boss does it. And the first one, when you open it up, it says, blame me for everything that went wrong. And then the second time you get in trouble, open up the second envelope. And the second envelope says, write two letters. Like, I've mangled it a little bit, but that's basically the point. The first time, you blame everything on what the predecessor did. The second time, start writing those letters.
So my point would be that Dubas is still on the first letter. And I think other people are more likely to say he's on the second letter, that he should be authoring his exit. Whereas I'm like, I think he's still in the blame the guy before me phase.
Yeah. Oh, no. By the way, I don't think Dubas should be gone. I would never, ever call for that. If we're just going to do the final results of sports, if I look at the ledger, I've seen a lot more winning from Lamoriello. Is it all because of him? Of course not. Being a GM means there's 100 other parts that you don't have control over. But one has done more winning. And this just gets back to the original point about the Islanders going, that narrative. If the Islanders win, I'm going to ignore that narrative. That one, to me, has been played out, and we can play it again in August when there's not much going on.
Lamoriello is smart, and Lamoriello has a way of doing things. But when we talk about New Jersey, that team was bad for a lot of years under him. And when they were good, and look, I don't want to say he's an idiot, but he also had a really good staff around him. Like, David Conte was considered to be like this grade A scout who helped him find the players that wound up being great for his system. And I'm not saying that makes him bad. A GM should use his staff, and a GM should get good staff that he can rely on. But none of these things happen in a vacuum. And I think Leafs fans who want to make the point lionize Lamoriello at the expense of logic.
Yes.
He's a smart guy.
I don't
guy.
Agree with that. Just like I was going to say, I agree with you. The lionizing of Lou makes no sense. But the other side of going, Lou wasn't that good because you're bummed out because Dubas' plan hasn't worked out yet. That also can, I also would push back on that.
Okay, so that's the bullshit Lou narrative I was describing, is the idea that he came here and he had this team ready to win and they got rid of him, when I think it was a much more mixed bag and some of his mistakes hadn't come home to roost just yet. Fair? Okay, yeah, so that's the Islanders. That's clearly a more contentious what if they win. Habs versus Lightning. Who are you pulling for there?
If I have to choose, I'm probably choosing Montreal, because you know Tampa won it all. They won it last year. They got Tom Brady. The Rays are an annoying baseball team. So, if I'm going to do my rankings, Tampa, I would much rather have the Islanders. You know, I get fresh blood, new team, all that. I'll take the Islanders over the Lightning.
You know, I like the way you look at it. And it's interesting you and I are so different, because for me, it's all about what's this got to do with the Leafs.
I divorced myself from that.
Right. And you're not going to like my next question then. But if Tampa wins, they're a super team and they've got to the point that all teams try to get to, which is to win multiple championships. I mean, everyone wants to win, but you're not really one for the ages until you've won multiple teams with basically the same squad. Now you're part of history. If they win, they're part of history. And it feels like, you know, we'll talk about this team the same way we did, you know, some of those Detroit teams, or some of those Pittsburgh teams. Like, they just elevate to a different category. And I think that's more interesting for the game in general. That said, though, it's been so long since a Canadian team has been here, and it is the Habs, and whether Leafs fans like it or not, they are the preeminent Canadian team. They've got the history, they've got the belt, and it is kind of fascinating to think, what if it comes back home? Mm-hmm. It's making it very hard not to cheer for the Habs.
Yeah, I'm still not cheering. I understand why people are. I'm not cheering for them, but I'm not rooting against them. And I've dropped all my Leaf anger. And just for now, I'll bring it right back up after the crowd boos Gary Bettman during the Stanley Cup presentation. But for now, I'm just trying to focus on, I'm actually going, this is like such the puritanical or the naive way. I'm actually just trying to appreciate the hockey for the hockey without staring at salary cap ledger sheets.
Well, and certainly Tampa Bay is the team to cheer for if you just want good, fun hockey. They're the most fun squad to watch
yes.
right now.
Yeah, aesthetically, 100%.
And that's a good reason to cheer for Tampa above the Habs, too. I was talking to this 11-year-old, because there's a lot of 11-year-olds in my life because of my daughter. And this kid, I don't even remember his name, but he was all decked out in Habs gear. And I told him straight up, I said, look, I can't cheer for your team, and I don't support you. But I'm not wishing for bad things either. And as a Leafs fan, that's the best I can do. He understood.
Yeah.
Smart kid.
I have this image, though, of, yeah, this 11-year-old has nothing to do with Charlotte. You just saw him walking on King Street, and you went up to him and said, excuse me, 11-year-old, I have some things to say to you.
That's kind of a John Mulaney-esque delivery.
It was. Excuse me.
Did you do it on purpose?
I didn't mean to, but then once it started, I'm like, excuse me, I have some things I want to talk to you about.
Actually do it really well.
It's not bad. I've got the Mulaney one down.
It's, you know, one of the things that's been really fun about this Habs run, I know they're boring and they're a low event team, and you know their job is to stifle the other better team, but the young kids, there's just something to be said about when young kids step up and deliver. And that Cole Caulfield goal last night, that was a hell of a goal where he chipped it to himself and then came down the wing.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it was nuts.
It's almost like a boxer who plays defense for 2 minutes and 57 seconds in a round and then flashes out one brilliant punch. They're like the Purnell Sweet Pea Whitaker of teams. They're just about avoiding trouble until they see a totally unexpected opening for offense, and they pop you a couple times enough to win the round.
So they're Floyd Mayweather Jr.
Yes. I was going a little bit more historical, and I refuse to support Floyd because I think Sweet Pea's the best. You know, Sweet Pea's the best defensive boxer. Okay, so here, look, I got a question for you. You clearly don't want to answer it. So is there anything
I will answer.
You want to say about the Habs?
No. Ask the question. They make me feel old when I see Cole Caulfield celebrating. I'm like, you're a kid. Like you're a kid out there.
You know, when they start flipping out like Fortnite celebrations.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's why I root for Shea Weber to score. That's a grizzled vet I can get behind.
I won't even call it a celly. I refuse. Yeah. Like, I don't think the word has ever been used out of my mouth, except for right now. There are no cellies in my home. Yes. What can the Leafs learn from this?
Nothing. They can't learn a thing. They've had years of learning and growing and getting there and nothing. They can't learn a thing. If they didn't learn it last year. They didn't learn it after losing game 5. They didn't learn it after losing game 6. They didn't learn it after when they lost game 7. I don't think they can learn a thing.
I think they can learn a couple of things. So let's take them in order. Right. Number one, goaltending is everything in the playoffs. The Habs could play as hard as they want, but if Carey Price doesn't stand on his head, and maybe even more importantly, if he doesn't get in the heads of shooters who start to feel frustrated and feel like they have to make, you know, the extra pass or make the double perfect shot, The Habs just aren't here. The Habs don't even get past the Leafs if Carey Price doesn't freak out shooters on the other team. And I think what they can learn from this is don't settle for Jack Campbell. Because if you don't think Jack Campbell can be dominant, you're not going to win. And I don't think Jack Campbell can be dominant. One, because Marner and Matthews and a bunch of other things were so much more discussable, the fact that Jack Campbell let in a bad goal in a tight game 7 kind of got swept under the rug. And people like him, and it's not like he was bad before that. But if you're going to look at the Leafs roster and say, I feel confident Jack Campbell's the guy, I think that's a mistake. And I know that he's super cheap and they have a cap issue, so he's an attractive option for that reason. But if a guy like Leonard is out there, or you can make a deal for someone that you just feel better about and think this guy can win a series for us, I think you got to do it. That's what I think they should learn.
I will push back on this.
Okay.
Carey Price last night, actually, he had a couple, especially in overtime, a couple really big saves. But I've actually felt that his numbers are incredible. He's been great.
He hasn't given up more than 2 goals since they played the Leafs.
Oh, no, I know that. He's been incredible, but the team in front of him has been as well. Like, I haven't seen him have to make too many of the crazy-ass saves. I would say that Jack Campbell had a better save percentage than Carey Price in their round together, and Campbell was really good in the regular season. And we've seen, you know, the Matt Murrays and the Jordan Binningtons win cups. I mean, I agree with you. Listen, the number one reason Montreal is here is Carey Price. But when I do the autopsy of the Maple Leafs, it still starts with their inability to score goals.
I agree. But my point is, and this is what they can learn, is that they haven't fixed their goaltending situation. And until they do, they're not a real contender.
If Matthews and Marner had at their normal production, then then maybe we're looking at Jack Campbell, or maybe you're looking at Jack Campbell in a higher light because maybe they go on a run.
Maybe, but if you're expecting your forwards to win 4 playoff rounds, I think you're mistaken. At some point, your goalie has to be the number one reason you got through. If not 7 games, at least a game or 2 during those 7. And I don't know if Jack Campbell's that guy. I don't know if he's that guy. My point is, he might be that guy. But if you think you've solved this and that you know the answer, you haven't. So that's why I'm saying don't settle for Jack Campbell.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I get you.
The other thing would be, for everybody who says you can't get a decent return for Marner, that will, you know, you'll never get another Marner, you don't have to. Now, that's not me saying they should get rid of Marner. I think they should look at it. I don't believe them when they say we're absolutely not moving him. I think they just have to say that for the same reason that Doc Rivers comes out and says, we have a plan for Ben Simmons. Like, you got to keep the balls up there, you know? You know, you got to make it look like you wouldn't do the deal. Can't make it too easy. I think one of the obvious narratives of the Habs winning was the Pacioretty deal, because Pacioretty was the Habs captain and they just beat the team that they traded him to. When they traded Pacioretty, he had had 530 goal seasons with the Habs. He was their captain, I think the 29th captain. And they got back Thomas Tatar, Nick Suzuki, and a second rounder turned into Matthias Norlander, who hasn't played for them yet. And everybody was like, Bergevin is a moron. They got rid of a great player for a bunch of what? Thomas Tatar had results right away. Like, he did pretty good. It was a good, the change of scene was good for him. But really the star in all of this is Nick Suzuki. You know, yes. a first round pick who now is 21 years old and he's scoring just under a point a game in these playoffs. And he makes $2.5 million to Pacioretty's seven. But more importantly, the numbers you need to know is he's 21 and Pacioretty is 32. Now, this is a bit different in the sense that a Marner is, you know, in his early 20s as well. But if you don't think that you can get something that's worth having for that superstar, you're wrong. And this is something, a mistake I think I've made in the years past, because I tend to look at these trades through all my experience analyzing basketball trades, where you never get back a player as good as the superstar you gave up. And bits and pieces don't help you win quite the way superstars do in the NBA. And I think what we've learned is that if you're not happy with your superstar and you make a deal for the right future pieces, you set yourself up for success in the NHL. And, you know, young fans and people who love other sports as well, I think that maybe one thing we've forgotten about hockey is it's kind of different than the other sports in that three good things is better than one great thing. And that's, I think, what Dubas could learn from looking at this, is they flipped Pacioretty. They flipped their captain while he was still scoring like hell and had had an enormous amount of success and was probably their best player outside of Carey Price. But now, a few years down the road, they're set up for future success. And Pacioretty is now officially at the craps table. So that's what I think they could learn.
Yep. It's a great point. And, you know, like someone threw it on Twitter that William Nylander still has more goals than anyone in Montreal. And it's weird to say, but this is the basketball NHL thing. It's almost like goals don't matter.
In the playoffs.
In the playoffs, one individual's, but then Matthews and Marner need to score. But no, you're right. Like the basketball NHL thing is a perfect analogy. And it just, things are just different. For right or for wrong, that crazy stat that Connor McDavid has like 500 playoff minutes and has drawn three penalties. For right or for wrong, it's just a different game. And listen, whoever wins the Stanley Cup, the star is still going to be there. Like Brayden Point and Kucherov last year, they won because of stars. But you're right, Bob. The Leafs do have to learn that lesson. And if there is a good offer out there, you got to pull the trigger.
Or at least you have to really consider it, especially because the prospect coverage is a little bit bare right now for the Leafs. Like, if you have faith that Matthews is going to be here for a while and probably re-sign when his number is up after, what is it, 3 more years? Like, this whole idea of your window, there's this obsession with, we got to win now. Like, this might not be a 6 to 7 year process. This might be an 8 to 10 year process. And if we say that Matthews might win, not like as the young Nathan MacKinnon superstar, but more as the John Tavares who's on the second line. Does anyone care? Does anyone feel like they fucked up the process because Matthews wasn't the best player on the team? He's now like sort of the complimentary superstar. Does anybody think that? No, you just want the cup, right?
Yeah.
Like, does anyone care if he wins at 25 or he wins at 29? I know that there's this hand-wringing at the end of every year as we have to, you know, do the autopsy on every season and explain why the process has failed. You know, the hockey world has changed. Like, COVID came in, the cap stayed flat. Like, you know, there were some deals under Lamoriello that kind of handcuffed them to win right now. It seems like good leadership would say, well, let's push the window back a few years.
The only, I mean, listen, you're always going to win the argument when you're on the side of patience and recency bias to let us freak out. I guess the only other side is it still comes down to every year it feels the same.
Does you know, that matter? Every year you lose feels the same.
Well, no, because if the Leafs lost to Winnipeg or if the Leafs lost to Vegas, then it would feel very different. It's when you always have the opportunity to win and you always find a way to lose. There is something troubling about that. I
think you're right, but I also think Masai Ujiri's philosophy of play-in game. Like, at some point you have to say, are we going to try to be good enough to push the narrative forward 2%? Or are we going to play our cards smart and win? Like, we're here to win championships. If you don't have a championship core, you tried it, it failed. You know, the worst thing you can do is make a mistake. The second worst thing you can do is make the same mistake again.
Well, I mean, the Leafs are heading down the path of making the same mistake again.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the patch are ready.
There's no evidence. The thing is I could be wrong, but there's, unfortunately, if you're a Leaf fan, there's less evidence that they'll be able to figure it out than there is evidence that they'll just keep doing the same thing. Of course, it doesn't mean that change can't happen and that next year things won't break right. Of course it could. But if you just go in, if you just on both ends of the ledger, the evidence is not exactly in the Leafs' favor.
I agree with you there. And so let's move off the Leafs for a second, Matt, because I have a perfect Matt Cause question.
Ooh.
And it comes out of the fact that you might have heard my words get a bit garbled there. It's because I mistimed my water bottle drink. I thought you were going to talk longer than you did. And I was taking a drink. You know how that is when you're doing interviews.
Yeah, of course. Of course. You read the length of the answer. And sometimes when someone gives a really short one, you're like, wait, I needed two beats longer. It happens all the time.
All the time. So you know what's in my water bottle right now?
What?
Pureed watermelon. It's watermelon juice.
How is it?
Delicious. So here's my question for you. What is the ultimate summer fruit?
Well, my answer is an obvious one. It's going to be mango. Because there are some fruit you can eat in the winter, and it's not as good as when you have it in July, but it's still really good. So if I was going to do summer fruit, watermelon would be second. No one eats watermelon in February. No one. So the watermelon goes above apples, bananas, all berries, things like that. Like the top three would be mango, watermelon, and kiwi.
All right. I'm going to push back here.
Yeah.
I think mango is an interesting choice, but here's the problem with mango. It's not portable.
That's true.
Part of a summer fruit is portability because you just want to grab one and go.
Yeah.
And watermelon's good for that because it's got its own, because the rind, it's got its own little handle. It's like the crust. Yeah. And then the other one that you didn't mention that I think would be my number two is cherries.
I'm not a cherry guy. That's my reason. I've just never been a big fan of cherries.
Okay. Here's the thing. Cherries, kind of like candy, kind of candy shaped, candy sized. And once again, you don't eat them in the winter. When I was a kid, when we got cherries, that was really special. That was like when we bought steak. To me, cherries are like the steak of the berry world. You don't eat them all the time. You certainly don't eat them all the time during the year. But when you get them, it's like, ooh, fancy. Same with watermelon. But watermelon was less fancy. Watermelon was kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies of fruit, right? Like you can't be dignified eating watermelon. You get it all over your face. You got a rind in your hand afterwards. It really is just down home food.
Yeah, it's the chicken wing of the fruit world is watermelon. And the thing about watermelon, you're right. It is incredibly portable. It screams summer. It's easy to manipulate. I think my only problem is watermelon has a ceiling in terms of flavor. And by the way, it's good. Like, I really like it. But a perfectly ripe mango hits another level. But mango's hard. You got to work for mango. Like, watermelon is a dog. You walk in and it's on its back and it says, rub my belly. The mango is a cat. You got to work for that.
But who wants to work for anything in the summer? See, that's the other
thing. No, I understand.
Mango's too hard. It's too finicky.
I know. You got to work for it.
It bruises too easily.
It's like king crab. You want to get that meat? You got to work for it. You got all these devices and then you're cracking things and it's a mess. It's worth it in the end, but you're right. The mango is a lot of work, and it's a high maintenance fruit.
The mango is the watermelon for the 1%. It's like the fancy version of watermelon. It's got great flavor. It only happens once a year, but you know, it's a little bit elitist, the mango, in my opinion. Yep. It's a little elitist.
It's, you know, you gotta work for it. But I think for summer fruit, as I said, I'm not a cherry guy. I put those two and kiwi, just because kiwi feels exotic and comes from a warm place. So it doesn't scream it's February on the 401.
Again, kiwi, too elitist. It's got a very specific, very tart taste. It's like a tangerine as fired through a boutique record label. It's like the boutique record label version of a tangerine. I would say also the great thing about watermelon is the cost per serving, is that you can buy a gigantic watermelon for $5 and it'll feed 12 people. Mangoes, yes. That same, the one mango costs the same as a whole watermelon.
No, mango is certainly, it is more expensive per bite than watermelon. There's no debate there.
I like the analogy you came up with king crab versus chicken wings, though.
Yeah.
And you like chicken wings, but you're a king crab guy. And yeah, I like king crab, but I'm a chicken wings guy. There you have it. See?
There you
go. We found a middle ground.
By the way, how, like, not now, but in your 20s, how obnoxious were you in the boutique record store?
Well, Matt, I was picking up my albums. So about as obnoxious as I am right now.
There you go.
I got a Raptors question. Do you want to do Jeff Pollock first? Or do you want to wait?
No. We mentioned boutique, and last time I almost called him a boutique winery. He is a boutique legally. Yeah, that word doesn't make sense. I tried. I failed. You know who doesn't fail? Jeff Pollock. He is our lawyer. At some point in your life, you're going to need a lawyer. If you go through your entire life without needing a lawyer, you are in the elite of the elite. You're the mango of this scenario. But for everyone else, for the rest of us, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. That's the website, jeffpollock.com. The phone number is 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. He's as friendly as watermelon, but he's as elite as king crab.
I like this, actually, as a slogan, a populist take on watermelon. Watermelon, for the rest of us.
Ooh, yeah.
It's like Festivus. It's for the rest of us.
So what's your Raptors question?
Well, how do you feel about the number 4 pick? Obviously happy, but what are your initial takes?
Oh, I was just ecstatic. I mean, they had like an 8% chance of getting it. The funny thing is the immediate moment of greed. Like, when they were saying the 8 pick, we were just like, okay, it's going to be the 8 pick. And then when it wasn't, you're like, okay, I'll just be happy with 7, whatever. But then when you knew it was going to get into the final 4, now you got greedy. Now it's like, oh, I want number 1. So you had a moment of being disappointed at getting number 4, but yet 6 minutes earlier, you would have been doing backflips for getting number 4. So no, but in total, it's about time they got some good luck. I loved it.
I was watching and just inserting names at the various slots. Like at number 10, I was like, oh, they're going to take like a we're thinking of Moses Moody, and then we got to eight. It was like, okay, well, maybe a James Book night. You know, they like to go off book a little bit. These guys do. And then at seven, it's like Davion Mitchell. And then when it wasn't there, it's like, oh my God, we're getting a Jalen. Do you think they'll make the pick, or do you think they'll trade it, or do you think they'll trade up or down?
If I'm going to guess, I'm going to say they are going to. I think they're going to try their best to trade it. I think they are. Masai Ujiri's head is 2 years of one elite treading water year and one bizarre year last year. I think they will try to trade it. And now we're all wondering, are they going to try to get in on Ben Simmons? But do you try to get Ben Simmons? But if you have to lose a bunch to get him, then how does that help? But I do think they're going to look to move it.
Well, it's an incredibly valuable piece now because it's four and not seven, because you can sell that there's a franchise player potentially out there. And, yeah, you know, if you set up a three-way deal where there's a pick swap with someone up top, maybe a Cleveland who also might have their pick and play, there's just an enormous number of options. And just to say, let's insert Jalen Suggs into the starting lineup next year, I don't know if it's that easy. There's a lot of intrigue going on. It's very cool.
It is. Well, what it does, Bobby, sort of hinted at, is it gives us, there's a lot more options. There's a lot more flexibility that what Masai Ujiri, if he's still here, Bobby Webster and everyone else can do. It opens up, it raises the ceiling. And now the job of the Raptors, can they turn that number four pick, either through draft or through trade, can they turn that player into someone who is better than Pascal Siakam?
That's the magic question. And I'm sure if I'm Masai, here's how I look at my team. I think, okay, I've actually stick-handled us through the last championship cycle and retained enough assets so that I have a good team to build on right now. I got Fred VanVleet in the backcourt. I got OG Anunoby, who's a hell of a role player on any championship team. And I got Pascal Siakam, who feels like we'll call him a B-plus superstar at his best. But that's not enough to win. That's enough to build on. I need that one thing. What's more likely for me to find it out there in the wilderness using, you know, this number four pick as bait, or to draft at number four and maybe get that guy? Because the easiest option is just to say, we think the guy we get at number four is going to turn into that guy. Because it doesn't matter if Pascal's your guy, and it doesn't matter if OG's your guy until you have your superstar, everybody else is replaceable. Maybe they thought it was going to be Pascal. It's not, but everybody else is expendable except the superstar. And the thing that's so fascinating about this is, at least how it's sold, any one of those top four players could be the guy you build around on a championship team. That is fraught. It might not go well, but it could go well. Matt, we got what we needed when we needed it.
Yes, and on top of that, the Raptors aren't necessarily in win-now mode.
Right.
You know, VanVleet, OG, and Siakam, they're all under 30. So you can draft a player and let him develop for a couple years. You know, Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker were taken in the early teens. You know, this stuff happens.
If you believe that a Scottie Barnes is going to be the best available player to you after Cade Cunningham, and you think Scotty Barnes is available at number five and the Magic want to trade up, trade down and get Scotty Barnes. It really comes down to picking talent. We have so much faith. You know, outside of Jakob Poeltl, there isn't really anybody in the Masai era you look at and go, oh, that didn't turn out to be great. You know, like Poeltl's fine. He's a serviceable player. Like, I guess, what was he, like a number nine pick? You know, but they've brought in some damn good talent, and they've gone sort of creative to do it. So I hope Masai is fully engaged in this, because this is exactly Masai's time to shine.
And I wonder if by getting the four pick, would that have played a part? And again, we don't know if he's coming back or not, but I wonder if that's playing a part in what Masai Ujiri, if he decides to stay in Toronto or not.
Let's say he believes that drafting Evan Mobley creates a front court that can win a championship. Maybe not like in year one, but say like in year two or three. Is that worth an extension? Because you think you have a chance at a championship. If you think drafting Jalen Green if he's going to turn into Carmelo Anthony in the sense that he's just going to be unlimited buckets and you can surround him with a great cast that can do the other things, maybe that wins a championship. Or if you think Jalen Suggs is like the next great point guard in the sense of point guard leadership, you know, you take him.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you this. We're not scouts. So what we think about how these players are going to turn out is useless.
Yes.
But we've read the projections of how they could turn out. And based on that, which of those top four would you most want on the Raptors?
I want the Jalen Suggs type. I just, you know, you look at the strength of the Suns or Trae Young. I want that offensive dynamic ball handler. And the great thing is, it's like, well, you got Van Vliet. Van Vliet is so versatile. He doesn't care if he's point guard, shooting guard, what he is. So that's kind of where I'm leaning towards.
I felt that way for a long time, but I keep hearing reports about Jalen Green is going to turn into an A-plus scorer. And watching the Raptors last year, we knew scoring and rebounding would be an issue. I feel like you can buy rebounding, but it's really hard to find scoring.
Yes.
And if he could be a guy who can get his own buckets, and if he can be a guy who makes defenses crazy because he can hit shots, you know, it's funny. It's like Philadelphia has become the number one example of what can go wrong. And they just didn't have enough shooters. They don't have enough shooters. You can't have enough shooters in today's NBA. And if Jalen Green winds up being the best scorer, I want that guy.
Yeah, no, and by the way, absolutely. I can be convinced, as somebody who's not a scout, you know, I'll read three articles and a tweet by Tom Haberstroh, and I'll change my opinion like that. But you look at the Clippers. You know, they got the shooting from Reggie Jackson, and man has had a big game here and there. And, you know, you just need as many shooters as you can.
The other thing is, Maddie, this is like so hockey of me, but maybe this is just where I am in my life too, because I've worked with a lot of teams and I see what works and what doesn't. I love that Suggs is an animal. I love that he is like insane about winning. I am more convinced of this, that talent's like what gets you to the table, but attitude is what makes you win, not talent. And if he's got the winning attitude and enough talent that to justify the pick, you build championships between the ears. You know, you build fantasy teams with talent. You build championships with what's between the ears.
I feel like you're baiting me into lamenting the Maple Leafs, so I'm not going to. But I am. I know you are. I know. I'm not taking the bait. I just love that I am going to be, if there is a mock draft out there, I'm reading it. Hell, I want Mel Kiper to do an NBA mock draft. I'll read that. Todd McShay. I'll read those as well.
I'll go one step further. I'm trying to move into Kevin O'Connor's place. I you can't give enough information right now. And it's also speculative and crazy, but it doesn't matter, does it? It is just the best. I didn't watch episode 3 of Loki, and I'm assuming you haven't watched any yet.
I'm building them up, Bob. I'm building them up.
I respect it for you, but I hate it for our listeners.
True. Okay. You know what? I think one of these days, maybe this weekend, because AB's working a lot, either as background or on-set medic stuff. So, like, if there's one of these nights where I'm here by myself, because she's giving me permission, she's not as interested, so I can just watch it, then, you know, I'll crack open a bottle and I'll just go through all three episodes while barbecuing up some chicken wings.
Wow, that's like peak cause. You're going to watch something you like with a bottle of tasty wine, barbecuing up some chicken wings.
Yeah. Yeah.
All that's missing is the mango. When I come, okay, so we have big news. Next week, we're going to do our first in-person pod that we've done in like, like what, 14 months, 15 months?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to go back to just being in person. It sounds so much better. It's just like, I'm thrilled to be able to do it in person again.
We were going to do it today, but I had to move a deadline for something to this afternoon. And so I just didn't have time to go back to your place. Like, to go to your place, come back home, and then go back downtown again, there wasn't time for it to finish my writing. So it was circumstantial. But just so people know, the plans are in works for Cause. You know what? We need some guests, too. I'm going to put Jonah Siegel on. Who else could we get as guests? We should solicit. We should hive mind this. Like, who do you want to hear come in as the third man or third person on our pod? Maybe we should get Jeff Pollock back in.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. I'm all for all of it. Now, we've got to do a slow opening here, Bob. I know you're all Doug Ford. I'm Bruce Arthur. I say we still got to do this slowly. You know, make sure everyone's double vaccinated. I got my double D, and away we go.
You're trying to bait me into a political conversation now. You know, I deleted a tweet this morning.
Oh, what was it?
I deleted a tweet. I had it, and I actually did hit send, and then I thought, you know, I don't want to deal with this. Just about how no reasonable person could vote for Doug Ford at this point. Like, if they were to present, they being the conservatives, a different candidate, we could debate the merits of that candidate. But at this point, seeing how Doug Ford has done, no reasonable person could say, sign me up for more.
Probably best.
What's that?
I was going to say, probably best. You know what's coming.
I know. And the funny thing is, it's not like I love the Libs or the NDP, but, you know, and if it's the right conservative, I would consider, if not voting, certainly not, you know, besmirching that candidate. But this guy's an idiot. And he's totally unfit for the gig. And if you say, I support that, what you're basically saying is whatever reason I have for doing it has nothing to do with politics or the welfare of the province. I'm doing it for religious reasons, or I'm doing it for ideological reasons or whatever. But you cannot say, I think the most qualified person in the whole province to run the affairs of the biggest province in the country is Doug Ford. That's what I think. If you think that, I cannot say you are a reasonable person. There, I think, you know what? Now I got it out there. That was my deleted tweet.
I think the problem with it, and I'm not gonna debate it, is there's a level of, I can't think of the word, inflexibility, where it's like extreme. There's when you say there's no way you could defend it. I think that's what rubs people the wrong way.
You know, I'm old fashioned in the sense that I think we should judge people by the job they've done or the job they propose to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't like Doug Ford because he proposed nothing. He proposed nothing. He proposed a buck a beer. And then my favorite line from Kathleen Wynne, who I don't think did that great a job either, but he was like, you know, we're going to talk to the nurses and we're going to come up with a plan. We're going to do this. We're going to come up with a plan. And she said in the debate, it was hilarious. She goes, you could have talked to them already. Then you'd have a plan now.
That's a good line.
It was really good. But it kind of pointed out that he was just sort of about, like, it was like the classic Trumpian. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be great. What is it? Doesn't matter. It's going to be great. Comes from me. It's going to be so good. You know, like, if that's acceptable to you, then I can't really debate that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like debating the taste of mango versus watermelon. In the end, I can't convince you watermelon's better if you love mango.
But I am open-minded to hearing you. No, I'm kidding. Mango is better. But no, Bob, you know what?
I'm sorry. I just got really depressed today because I was reading in The Star just this op-ed piece about how no province has shut down schools any longer than Ontario has. And it's like, why? Why did we have to do the shittiest job? You know, Trudeau was prime minister for everybody. And I'm not saying Trudeau handled everything right. In fact, I'm saying he didn't handle everything right. But he was prime minister for everybody. He didn't say, I'm going to be prime minister for everybody, but I'm really going to stick it to Ontario. Give them special different rules. No, we had an idiot in charge who couldn't manage this thing. And we suffered more than anybody else, at least in terms of a bunch of closures that extended way beyond. And this wasn't him being overcautious. This was him being not cautious enough to start and letting things spiral so far out of control that now we had to do the work moving backwards.
I think you were wise using all your characters here than on Twitter.
I guess so. I don't know. It doesn't make me
and
feel.
By the way, I agree with everything you've said. And at the same time, I'm still going to laugh at you. It's such the classic liberal. I was reading the op-ed piece of the Toronto Star and they had some choice words for Doug Ford. I agree with everything you said. But, you know, some very right-leaning person is going, classic downtown Torontonian.
You know, and this is what I would say to that right-wing leaning person. It's not because it was an op-ed, and it's not because it was in the Star. It's because of a number, which was the number of days we had school closures in this province versus everybody else. If ours is the highest, we didn't do that good. And I don't know how you can debate it just because that number is in a paper you don't like.
Hell yeah.
You know, I worry about my kid, and I think a lot of parents worry about their kids. My kid loved school. This year started. Now she hates school. She's 11. It could just be the age. You know, I started to lose my faith in school around there, you know, so it could just be the age. But honestly, what they've asked these kids to do, and it could have been handled so differently. Anyway, I'm sorry. Now I've really derailed this mother.
Well, we got to go anyway. I'm saying, Bob, I want you to get to Twitter right now and ask the one question that's going to get everyone angry. Throw it out on a poll, Bob. Watermelon or mango?
Yeah. I'm going to put cherries on there, too, I think.
Ooh. Bob, there's no room in our political system for a third party. You're just throwing your vote away. Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cos podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.